Hello, hello.
Hola, muchacho. How you doing?
Bien, gracias.
I think, you know, when I sit and look like this, it looks like I'm looking at you. For those of you that are not
seeing this. Wait.
Tom hello. Is sitting on my... hello. Tom is sitting on my right in the video.
So, right. Because there is a video version. Down. If you didn't know, there is a
there
video
is.
Version, and it's
you should definitely promote it, right now.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever actually even talked about it, but we each put it up on our channels for channel members. So if you're a member on either of our channels, you get the video version. And
absolutely,
it's
and
super high production value.
I will say, as you can hear,
yeah,
But Tom is the I would say the camera operator and the. What can we call you, like the mic operator?
The technical guy, director.
The tech dude.
Yeah, but yeah, because we're just using Ecamm Live, the interview mode. So like if anyone's wondering how to do a podcast with someone not around, there's a lot of ways. I've been using Ecamm Live because it works really well. And then we can just record directly in Ecamm and it even splits our audio tracks. So as soon as we're done, I already have both audio tracks on my computer. I can throw them into editing software if I need to like level it out, which sometimes I don't even need to do that. And then that's it. And the audio can go be audio and the video, I just share the link with Peter and then you can upload it. And then I upload it on mine and it's done. It's like the easiest workflow ever.
That's insanely good.
I like it. I'm having fun.
And also,
it.
I mean, like I'm doing my sound like through the, through Rodecaster Pro connected to my computer. And I actually got some people saying this in Nanlite stream that I was in the other day, that the audio quality was insanely good. I can hear it myself, but I hope it is.
Yeah. Yeah. The Rodecaster always sounds good. The one tricky thing with the Rodecaster, and it took me like over a year to learn this, is the headphone preamps are its weakest spot. So when you plug in your headphones, sometimes you hear like a staticky hiss, but it's not actually on the recording or the output. It's just in your headphones. And it can make you feel crazy if you're like, my mic has static on it, but it actually doesn't. Because the actual output from the Rodecaster is really, really quiet, like in terms of background hiss. And so it's super crisp audio. I love it. Anyway, I've talked about the Rodecaster in a lot of videos. If you want to go check those out, you can learn more about it.
Yeah, talking about a lot of videos, I recently dropped a video covering my favorite Sony lenses of all time. And the fun thing is that these are lenses that I've talked about before, but not all of them in one single video. But I've talked about like two lenses and then another lens in one video and then two of the lenses and then another one in the video, but not all of these in the same video. But I think it was pretty funny because I got some comments saying like, hey, Peter, you know, you've already done videos on these lenses. And that got me to think of like, can you do too many videos on specific things?
I mean, it's tough because I have the Rodecaster is a great example. I literally have, with the two videos I have scheduled, I have 20 videos about the Rodecaster on my channel. But people like them. And it's helpful. I know not everybody like is going to jump on a Rodecaster video. The biggest danger, which I feel like is even less of a danger with some of that camera lenses, is when that thing becomes obsolete. Because Rodecaster is great. It's going to last a long time, but it's not going to last forever. Sure. Like it's, you know, it's like making, well, it's not as temporary as like an iPhone would be because nobody cares about the iPhone 12 as soon as iPhone 13 comes out. But the Rodecaster has a longer lifespan than that. But there's still going to come a point in time where it's like everyone who has one, everyone's going to get one, has it. They know how to use it. And something new comes out. And if your whole channel is based around that, it's like when gaming channels are based on one game and then that game is not popular anymore. And like, oh, no. So I think that's the risk. Audience could get fatigued. But like you said, it's sort of interesting because you're like, OK, this lens versus this lens. Cool. But it's almost like a what do they call it? It's like a. I can't think of the term when there's like sports teams and it's all the different, you know, ranking whatever, ranked matches to get to the best ones. It's like in all of these different categories. So Peter's talked about these two lenses and these two lenses, but now all four of them plus this one. It's like, I don't know, it's a different perspective. And I think it's helpful because you're answering people's questions. I don't know. I mean, people should just be happy to get a video.
Yeah, but I think like when it comes to camera lenses, I think it's a lot that you grow into. You know, you buy a lens and then you love the lens because it's new, but then you realize that you don't use the lens so much as you thought you would. Mm-hmm. And that kind of like creates this whole thing with, hang on, let me just quick pause.
Sure. We're talking about camera lenses today and how camera lenses are things that can, that you grow into, which actually makes sense because when I got my first camera, I didn't know anything about lenses. It came with the 18 to 55 millimeter kit lens. And then eventually I learned, oh, I want to go further than 55 millimeters. And I learned I needed a zoom lens. And then I learned about wide apertures and I wanted a blurry background. How do you get a blurry background? You need a lens with a fast aperture. So then it was like, okay, get the nifty 50 1.8, and then you can get blurry backgrounds. And I think that's one of the reasons kit lenses are good, is because the quality is okay and you can take great photos with them, but also they help you figure out where you want to go with your lens at a relatively inexpensive price. So you can like say, hey, you know, I do want a wider shot. I do want more zoomed in stuff. I do want a shallower depth of field. And then you can figure out where you need to go and where you actually want to invest. Because the first time you spend what, you know, hundreds, if not $1,000 or $2,000 on a lens, it feels very scary. And, but the good thing with lenses though, is when you invest in the right ones that you're happy with, they stick around for a really long time. And that was me stalling while talking about my experience with camera lenses. And here's a tidbit, my most recent lens comparison. If anybody's curious on the Canon versus Sony front, the Sony 50 millimeter 1.8 versus the Canon 50 millimeter 1.8. If you're watching the video version, Peter is running around his studio. The Canon RF 50 1.8 is an amazing lens, and the Sony 50 millimeter 1.8 is good, but it's not nearly as good as the Canon's is, and I'm sad about that. Anyway, that was me talking about lenses. Interest. Yes.
Okay, so I just had to interrupt because the I haven't put any signs on where my company is located, mainly because I was very worried about someone breaking into the studio. But now, when I had like the alarm, the security cameras and all that, I still haven't put up a sign. So whenever it comes with like FedEx, UPS or anything similar, I just get to open the window and then ask them what they have. But this time it wasn't for me.
Oh, that's, you know what? It's kind of like old school charming in a way. It's like, hello, sir. Like, what, do you have a thing for me? No, I don't.
Okay. Yeah, and I personally love the human interaction, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's fun. I like it. And it would be kind of scary to say, like, yeah, here's where, you know, here's a bunch of videos about all this expensive gear that's in this space. And here's a sign outside that says, like, here's my place where everything is, and you know what's
big
inside.
Neon arrow.
Yeah, like, that would be pretty scary.
No, yeah. But I've been thinking about that a whole lot. Like, if someone were to break into this place, and of course, it's always a risk having a company and having a place where a lot of expensive gear is stored. But I do have a proper alarm with security guards directly connected to it, and the security cameras and the doorbell, you know, all that stuff. Right. And I'm like, somewhere you have to think of, if someone wants to steal from you, they're going to steal from you, you know?
Yeah. At a certain point, it's like, if they want to do it, it's going to happen. And just hopefully, I guess that's why you get insurance and stuff. It's, yeah. I don't know. It's, I have a similar fear. I have that fear, but also living in California, we get earthquakes a lot. Wow. And our house is right next to the big San Andreas fault, which is like one of the biggest faults that there is. And I'm always worried because I have like my camera gear and stuff on shelves. I'm like, if there's a big earthquake, all that stuff could just fall down. So maybe I should keep it in camera bags so that way that won't happen. But it's such a pain in the butt to get everything out of camera bags. So I'm always just like, please don't fall.
you don't have to worry, though. The Rock is going to come and save you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately, that's even the perk. So.
No, I can totally see your point, because having the expensive stuff on the shelves and then start to shake, fall down, glass breaks and all that. Is those things even covered, or do you have a separate insurance for earthquakes?
You have to get a separate insurance, which I have, so it's good, but it's, you know, and it's not even that expensive, but we are right, like there's literally like the San Andreas movie. That fault is, I mean,
in your maybe backyard.
Basically, it's like less than a mile away from where I live. So, I don't know, a couple kilometers maybe. It's just right there. Like, you can go hiking up in the fault, and it's, like, super cool. And, you know, we get earthquakes all the time, which is funny because, like, the big California thing with earthquakes is you have one, and you always just kind of wait and go, like, do we need to do anything? Or are we just going to, like, you always have to wait till it happens for a while, and then you're like, okay, we'll go outside. But the big ones are very scary, no matter how many you go through.
Isn't it more safe to be outside than inside, though?
Yeah, it is. But there's so many earthquakes that, like, if you're watching TV or something, it's like you're kind of like, okay, am I really going to get up and go do something right now? Or, like, if this is a small one, like, who cares? But once it's like a really big one, then you're like, yeah, we're going to get outside and away from everything.
This is something that I want to see in your next vlog. Whenever that is, I want to see it.
Earthquake preparedness. Oh, man.
We both that and when you're watching the TV and it starts to bounce around.
I feel like anybody in California relates to that because it happens so much. We have a lamp that hangs over our couch in the living room, and that's it kind of like swings. And so that's if I feel like, was that an earthquake? Because sometimes a big truck drives by or something. You're like, oh, is that an earthquake? And I just look at the lamp. And if the lamp's moving, I'm like, ah, it was an earthquake. But there's bad ones. Like, my wife, Heather, was in the... she lived in Northridge, which is by Los Angeles. And in 1994, I think it was, there was a huge earthquake there where, like, freeway overpasses collapsed. And, things got destroyed and stuff. And she was right in the heart of that. And their whole house got, like... It looked like someone just came in and just threw everything and knocked everything over. She got trapped in her room because, like, a bookshelf blocked the door shut. It's really scary. But fortunately, most earthquakes you experience are just, like, kind of a weird movement, and then they're done. It's fine.
I can't really imagine that, because during my entire lifetime here in Sweden, we've had one earthquake that was, like, probably, like, three or four person in the entire Sweden that noticed it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with, like, it seems like anywhere you live in the world, there's always something. And definitely in the United States, like, depending on where you live, you either get earthquakes or tornadoes or hurricanes. And it's like, I guess earthquakes, I would rather be here than tornadoes. Because,
yeah,
those seem more
terrifying. I have to agree on that.
So, yeah, this has been Weather Talk with Peter and Tom.
Talking about insurance, though, for those of you that are thinking about getting insurance, I highly recommend it, but make sure that you have the right insurance and make sure that your gear is covered by that insurance, because I don't remember if you remember when I crashed my FPV drone into my computer screen.
I do remember that.
Yeah, I do too.
So sad.
Unfortunately. And I called insurance. And they were like, yeah, we can absolutely fix this. So we have like a base rate, and then they deduct a specific price from that, or a specific percentage. And that percentage, the base rate was, I think it was around $4,000. And they deduct, what was it? A certain percentage of that. So in any case, the amount of money that I would be able to get back from the screen was around $100. And the screen cost me like $1,500.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, but why? And right. she was like, I don't know. And I said, yeah. so I need to get the right insurance. And she was like, yeah, you probably should look it up.
Yeah, that's true. And there's so many different ones. Like, you can get equipment specific insurance, but also, like, if you live in a home, your homeowner's insurance could cover it, what company you use. So if you have a lot of gear, it's worth checking out. And it's also worth documenting what you have. Like your studio is very well documented just in videos.
Yeah, I know.
But even just like going around with a phone or something and just showing, like, here's my screen. It's a $1,500 screen. Here's my camera. It's a $4,000 camera.
I think
here's
serial numbers. If you can get that, that is the best thing.
On the big pieces of gear. So that way, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, like most gear actually has serial numbers because they are pretty expensive. I even think that the Pava tubes have, yeah, they do have serial numbers right there.
Oh, yeah.
Like the small ones. So being able to just write that down or take some photos of it, then you can definitely say to the insurance that, here, this was what I had. Can you cover it?
Yeah, it doesn't look like you're just doing insurance fraud.
Yeah. It's like, hey, Peter, you have, X amount of thousands of dollars of equipment that you want to get.
All of my RE cameras. Oh, no. What happened?
Oh, man. Yeah, but insurance, I highly recommend it. And if you haven't got it on your gear as a freelancer, get one, especially one that covers the camera that you always use and all the equipment that you got in your camera bag.
Yeah, it's not the most exciting thing to think about or talk about when you're like, I'm video filmmaker, but it's really important because when you think of what would happen if your gear got damaged, lost, stolen, it could be devastating. So protecting it is so important. That's the first time I ever felt like an adult. I remember as a kid was the first time I had a serious discussion about insurance where I was like very interested in like, oh, yes, insurance policy. This is my childhood is over.
It's
real important.
It's not something that you think about when you're younger because it's you don't have to.
Yeah, but if your business and your livelihood or even just you have a lot of money invested in something, like, you definitely want to take care of it and protect it. And I know too, for freelancers, there's also insurance that can cover your clients. So if you're filming someone and they hurt themselves, you're not held liable for that. Whatever you're doing, there's probably a specific type of insurance to cover that. Like, I don't need that because that's only me in here. I hurt myself in this room all the time, but there's like nobody else ever in here. So it's fine.
Yeah, true. Until the point where you get a visitor and then you're going to be like, don't touch anything. You're going to hurt yourself.
it's just a small space and there's a lot of metal poles sticking out. So you're just like, hit heads a lot. Going back to stuff, I did want to say business-wise, congrats on actually like getting all your company stuff approved and named and
official.
That's cool.
Peter Lindgren Creative.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Going to be a good one. It feels good. PLC.
I like it. I'm a little traumatized because when I was a teacher, we had meetings called PLCs and it was like peer leadership committee or something, and it was just boring meetings with other teachers that you had to go to like once a month. So it'd be like, today is PLC day, and I was like, no. And now
I guess we can say that Wednesdays is PLC days.
That was actually my actual job. PLC day was on Wednesdays, so nothing has changed. Great. This is just a better
back PLC. normal stuff.
Great. So I saw that, and then I saw
it feels good.
Good. I mean, that's another one of those things that, like, filling out applications and going to the bank and whatever, it's not the most exciting thing, but it is also exciting when you do it and you get it done and it's official, and it's a really good feeling.
Yeah.
And it's
totally agree.
It's important. But I also saw your video about it was on your vlog channel about the eternal struggle of what the heck, where do I post these vlogs? And,
Yeah, I mean, I think we might be able to dive back into that subject again because it's been a couple of weeks since we talked about it lately.
Yeah, well, I remember you said you wanted to go through August and see what happened and then, like, assess.
Yeah. So, the last, I would say, the last 25 videos prior to my last 4 or 5 videos, I didn't really pay that much of attention to the thumbnails of the videos or the content itself, because I mainly enjoy shooting the vlogs, mainly because it's sharing my life, it's documenting and all that we've talked about. But it also, it feels like it hurt my channel in a way that I didn't want the channel to experience, I guess you can say. I thought it would change a little bit, but I think I have two options. Either I got to give it longer time, and then I got to just keep doing the vlogs for like several months, and then hopefully I'm going to get into a routine where I can create better thumbnails, make better titles and better things, or I could go back and just drop the occasional, you know, talk about my camera lenses, talk about tutorials, talk about cameras and those kind of things that I know work. But the difference here is that the tutorials that I've been dropping and the those kind of videos, you know, the behind the scenes, those are very good because they teach you a whole lot. But it's like they are searchable, but they don't provide any value of entertainment except for the learning things, you know?
Right, right.
Of course, it's always about the focus is the how to get to shot or how to expose or how to do this. And I think that that is good, of course, because it has its place on YouTube. But in my opinion, that is also what makes me burn out because I don't want to do that all the time. And I think that PewDiePie had something similar, you know, where he made specific videos for a very, very long time. And then it felt like he wanted to do something differently. I think you said it as well. And then he tried it and it kind of failed, you know?
Yeah.
Fell flat. I mean,
he's had a few failures. Yeah. But it's such an interesting thing. And what I'm fascinated by, and I'm curious what your thought is on this, is last week after we recorded our podcast, we just hung out and talked for a bit and we talked about thumbnails. And you made a video that was like sort of similar on like a similar topic. And we were talking about our thumbnails and we went through both our channels and sort of looked at how videos performed, not just with better thumbnails, but with thumbnails that we spent more time on. And we both saw a direct correlation on better thumbnail equals better video performance, almost regardless of the topic. And then we each went through our top like 20 videos on our channel and tried to figure out what the common thread was. And you know, like yours, there was a lot of really high end photography in the top thumbnails. And mine, there was also like better photography, but there was actually a little bit less like text on the thumbnails and a little like, I really like my thumbnails and I actually get a lot of positive feedback on them, which is nice. But if you go back and look at a lot of them, there's a lot of text. There's the image, there's graphical like glowy elements, then there's usually bold text, and then there's smaller text. It's a lot to look at. And especially when you think of someone on a phone, which I always look at the thumbnail and make sure it looks good small. But what I didn't consider was when someone's flipping through, it might look good on their phone screen, but there's so much stuff for them to try to like decipher, you know, that even if they want to, they just sort of get tired and move on. And I have been trying. I have a nice handful of videos that I redid stuff, trying to keep my style but simplify it. You know, last week you said, I even showed you the video that was coming out last Thursday, and it was about my computer monitor arm. And you were like, that's cool, but could you like film that, or could you take a photo against a brighter background? I was like, yeah. And I spent that day redoing the thumbnail, and video was the first time I've had a 1 out of 10 video in the good way in like months. And
that's like, nice.
It was a broader topic because it was just a sort of a general computer related topic. So it is broader, but I can't help but think that the thumbnail really helps. So then I've been going through and like, like I have a batch of videos that I'm working on and scheduling. So I've like redid the thumbnails for all those. And I'm really happy with it. And I'm super excited. I'll show you the one. This is a video I just finished today. I think I made one of, if not my favorite thumbnail ever. And it is live streaming mistakes that I see people making all the time.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a very good one.
I really like this one.
Are listening right now, it's like Tom sitting in a very, very, very fun face with his, like, he looks like he's being given up and his screen is on fire.
Yeah, there's literally confusion. Not in real life. I Photoshopped my computer display on fire, and then it just says mistakes in big kind of crooked letters over the top. And I really like that one. I think seeing it, you know, like pop up
that
in my unlisted videos,
well,
I think it will. And I also got, this is where I'm trying to tie this all together. I have a friend who, this is a crazy story. He made his first YouTube video last July, which was also the first video he ever made. And his channel's totally different than ours. He talks about like interior design and decorating. Totally different. And his channel was doing okay. Like he actually hit like the 1,000 and 2,000 subscriber mark after only like 3 or 4 months. And then after 6 months, he suddenly shot up to 70,000 subscribers. And then he shot up to like 170. And now, barely a year later, he's at like 210, 2 something. Literally has only been making videos for a year. But he's had to learn to adapt like really quickly from what the videos were like when his channel was 500 subscribers to 50,000, 100,000, 200,000. And so I was talking to him a little bit and he gave me some interesting advice. And I'm wondering what your perspective is. From where you're at,
I look forward to hearing this.
He said that the things that get you to 1,000 or 10,000 subscribers are not the things that are going to get you to 100,000 subscribers. He was talking to me because where like my channel was sort of flatlining for a while, and what he meant was he was like, you already have an audience. Like when your channel is smaller, you're trying to build up your audience, and people are finding you through search. But now, at 70,000 or around there, like you have an audience. And so it's less about trying to just make search related content and super niche things. And it's more about like making the stuff that this audience is going to engage with in a really like that they're going to be excited about. And by doing that, that's what's going to make them want to watch it, which will then in turn, of course, help the videos be recommended. And I like that advice because it was essentially like just focus on pleasing the people who are already there in the first place. And I also got feedback from just people who watch who were saying like, I found your channel when I was looking for the Rodecaster or looking for a mic or a streaming thing, and you solved that problem, but I like you and your videos, so I still watch even though I don't need like, even though they're not interested in the stuff I'm talking about. And that was interesting to me, that change in like the idea that the things that help your channel grow initially aren't the things that will help it keep growing, and the way you approach your audience kind of changes. And we had a very similar discussion to what you and I had, where it was kind of like not clickbait, but things that are really like, wait, what is that about? Like, huh? And you know, it feels very YouTube-y and very, you know, it's a different approach. It's a little broader of an approach, but you're still delivering on what the video says it's going to be. You're not like actually clickbaiting somebody, but really keeping that stuff in mind.
I think that this is a very good topic because there's probably no clear answer to this, but thinking about it, yes, of course the audience is there. And you have to think about what the audience is going to like. But for example, in my case, I've set a very high standard on what I can produce.
Yeah.
You know? So if I want to take this standard and constantly level up and make more interesting videos on the same standard or what the audience is expecting from me, then that is eventually going to kill my creativity because I cannot have the standard to a certain extent all the way at the top all the time in my videos. And the audience expects like Rivals 4, Rivals 5, because I have made Rivals 3, Rivals 1. But those are unique videos. Mm-hmm. And the poker B-roll is a unique video. I can't do that again. And I can't do a behind the scenes every single time for my audience, you know?
Right. Right. Did we talk about sorry, go ahead.
No, you can chip in.
No, I was going to say, this reminds me, I don't remember if we've talked about this, but Peter McKinnon's Filmmaker Reacts videos, have we talked about these?
Not really, no.
Okay, because Peter's channel, obviously, like, if you're listening, you know who Peter McKinnon is. I have no idea the amount of hours that he has put into his channel over the years. It's got to be, like, astronomical. But if you go to his channel and you look up most popular videos, his most popular video is his very first, like, Filmmaker Reacts to Crazy Camera Techniques, which is him sitting at a table watching videos on his phone and just going like, whoa, this is crazy. Like, that's, you know, he has flown in hot air balloons. He's slept in an ice hotel. He's met, you know, celebrities, traveled around the world, all this stuff. But that's the video that is the most popular video. I think it's like 10 million views or something. And I would imagine that that was probably confusing, if not a little frustrating, to go like, really? Like, after everything I've done, this is the one that's most popular? But also, it's a relatively easy video to make. Like, you need his personality to be interesting to see the reactions to. But in terms of, like, production, it's really a simple video. And it did really well. And then you can see after that came out, every month or two, he would do another one of like reacts again, reacts this. And they all did well, but they all did less well. Each one did a little worse than the one before it. And so even though it was something that was super popular, that it seemed like the audience wanted, it's like, it still didn't perform.
It's already been done.
Yeah. And so it's this weird thing where it's like people... As a viewer, sometimes you think you want something and you're just like, I wish that person would just do that same thing again. You know, that band would just make those same kind of songs again, but then you get what you want and you get kind of bored of it.
And yeah, but
it's this very tough thing to navigate.
This brings me back to something that I read online pretty recently, which was never fall in love to the place that you're on vacation at.
Yeah, I think I read something really similar really recently too.
And the reason for it is because, like, you're there for the first time. All the impressions that you get are new. And you're off work. You don't have to cook. You don't have to do anything. You're just there. You know, you have the time to really embrace all the impressions that you have. And I think that when you're watching a movie for the first time, you spend the time. You're there to watch the movie. When you watch a YouTube video for the first time, you don't know what you're about to expect. And I think that that is like watching Peter McKinnon react to those videos. He reacted in such a good way that you were like, oh, I want to see this again. But when he does it again, it kind of feels like I've already seen this. And I think the same for me, you know, when people saw the poker video, it was like, oh, this is so good. And then we want more. And then I made the Office B-roll and it was like, oh, it's so good, but not as good as the poker video though. You know?
Yeah. So. It's and that's tough. I guess it's extra tough on a platform like YouTube where I don't want to say you get punished, but you kind of feel sometimes like you get punished when you step out and do something different because you're like, okay, this is what everyone seems to like, but I know they're not gonna like it forever. So let me step over here and do something different. But if that doesn't perform well, then it's really tough. And I can't prove this, but it really felt like once I had multiple videos in a row, like six or so videos in a row that were like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10, like very low performing videos, it really felt like there was sort of like a black mark on my channel where like YouTube wasn't even going to try anymore. Like, 'cause videos that I really was like, this should be performing at least pretty decently, we're just like totally tanking. And it felt like because your video has underperformed so many times, we don't really believe in you anymore. And it's not until something breaks through in a crazy way that they're like, oh yeah, welcome back here, we'll do this.
Yeah, but
and I don't know if that's how it works or not, but it makes it hard to want to experiment, like, because you don't want to hurt your channel.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, because for me, I'm just going to say straight up, and you probably know this if you watch my channel, but like I'm making a decent amount of money. I don't need to make more money, but the goal that I have makes me want more money because I want to buy a house. And to be able to get to that point, I need to make even more money than I am today. And also, if I want to take my channel to the next level with, for example, an editor, then I need to make way more money than I am right now.
Yeah.
And I think that that is, for me, the hardest part is to like find where I can make more money, because I was actually looking through the statistics from when me and Edwin started work together, which was in almost exactly a year ago. Mm-hmm. And the overall subscribers and views has been going down ever since. I don't know if it's because we work together or if it's because YouTube has changed anything, but the overall views went down, the overall subscriber rate went down, and the money was very good in November and December, but that is because YouTube really pushes ads.
Right.
For the holidays. For the holidays. But it got to a point where I couldn't sustain having Edwin with me because it cost too much money. But now that I don't have him with me, I have this excess of money, theoretically, because that is not the right case. But I had this, and I'm going to get to why, but I have this excess of money. But since YouTube has like cut my views in half, it kind of removed those, like that income from me. So now I don't have that as an extra money. So I can't hire someone. I can't do anything right now except for just do the things on my own and try to find like the niche where I get the most views on my channel to be able to get the views back up again so that I can develop the channel into a different way.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of weird.
It's really tough. Like that's a hard thing to navigate. And, you know, YouTube doesn't really give you any guidance, not to complain or anything, but they don't, there's no telling you like, this is what we're looking for. You know, focus on watch time, focus on click-through rate, focus on like, what is it that you need me to get better at? They don't really tell you. And I'm sure it's a combination of 10,000 different things, so you can't even really narrow it down, but it is really tough. And it's hard to, you know, like if money went up, so we're heading sort of into the holiday season, I'm sure that means income will go up. But if you don't know what the sustainability is, it'd be dangerous to hire someone and then after 3 months be like, actually, everything's back down again, so you got to go. Because that's going to be really hard for someone to get a job, lose a job, like, you know.
Especially now during the pandemic and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's really tough.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, like, I would love for, like, to have Edwin as a camera operator and then someone that can edit the videos, but looking at it, it's not going to be sustainable. And also, since like my focus is going to be away from the behind the scenes in the sense of the way that I have done them, because as we said, you know, the audience has already seen it. I can't do much more things on that particular topic unless I'm just making something for fun.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It's, but I think the vlogs are my kind of pressure relief, and it kind of removes all the pressure that I have, because I still have the pressure of when I want to make a vlog on my main channel, it has to be at a certain level. Otherwise, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure.
Then you go and watch someone else that are making vlogs that are not in the camera niche, and all they do is literally have their phone and talk into it for the entire video.
Right.
And it does well.
Right. And I'm sure it's hard to put out of your mind, like, oh, 500,000 people are here to, you know, see this thing.
It's impossible.
And the niche really does matter, because my friend I mentioned earlier, who's in the interior design niche, we met like last year as he was growing and he wanted a new camera. He ended up getting the A7S III and the 24mm lens, which was like to go from making your first video to like that. But he was like, I want to do this because I want to learn more about it. I want it to look good. But he even told me, he's like, in my niche, the viewers don't care. Like, as long as they can see and hear me, they're fine. They don't care what the quality is. They don't care what camera I'm using, if it's in 4K. It's just not what is prioritized by the viewers in that niche. And so that does totally change things, because then as soon as he shows up with shallow depth of field, he stands out like you wouldn't believe compared to everyone else who's using, you know, just whatever, you know, old kind of incorrectly used camera they might be using. But there's a little more freedom versus, like the guy who's known for super cinematic looking stuff, and now it's a vlog, but what? It's just on a phone? Ew.
it's so hard, because I'm not complaining about this, but I think it's fascinating, because I was watching I dove into the depths of RC cars on YouTube, and I was watching a lot of videos on RC cars, and to my amazement, there are people that are running full-on YouTube channels at their full-time job with a GoPro.
Yeah,
that's it.
Oh yeah.
You know, so they have the GoPro, they talk into the GoPro, they put the GoPro onto the RC car, and then they talk into the GoPro, and then I'm like, what?
Yeah, that's all.
And it's entertaining.
Yeah, there's a channel I've been following for years. I can't remember the name, so I feel terrible. But it's a guy who does I forget what it's called even. It's like a personal flying craft. Basically, he has a thing that it looks like a chair, like an outdoor yard chair. And it has a giant fan strapped to the back and a parachute, and you can fly it. You just run and it takes off and he flies through the sky. And he has a whole bunch of videos about he lives out in the farm area. So it's very rural. And he has a bunch of videos about going to McDonald's on my flying craft. And it's just him, it's all just a GoPro. I think some of the times the GoPro is literally attached to his foot. And so he just sticks his foot out, and it's pointed at him like a selfie stick, and that's what his video is.
I mean, come on.
And then he lands his thing at McDonald's. Yeah, he lands at McDonald's, he gets a burger, he goes back, and then he's just flying home, and he's just sitting there in the sky eating a burger and talking about it. And most of the audio is coming from a headset, so it's really bad walkie-talkie sound. But it's so, I mean, as soon as you find one of those videos, and I wish I remember the name of the channel, you'll watch seven of them in a row, because it's just so... It's so interesting, even though it's not all of his camera equipment combined is less than the cost of the A7S III probably. But
see, and I think that is cool. I think that is what it's supposed to be. Yeah. And I think that it kind of YouTube kind of stops you, or especially when you are in my position, it feels like YouTube stops you from making those videos, mainly because if you do, you're going to get YouTube is going to say hey, no, we don't like those kind of videos on this channel.
Yeah. I never like complaining about YouTube, because I think it's such an amazing platform, but I think it's important to talk about this stuff, because I didn't tell you about this even a couple weeks ago on the podcast that I do with Heather. we kind of talked about this, because that morning I had a video come out. It performed like an anchor, it just sunk straight to the bottom. And that's fine. I was used to that. And I was just like, you know what? It's okay, because the people who are watching it are getting a lot out of it and really like it. It's just, there's not that many of them. And I had been telling myself that for months at this point of it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And I had been getting frustrated, but I didn't realize how frustrated I was. And suddenly she came out and I was eating breakfast, and she was like, hey, how's your video from today doing? And I just all of this frustration that I didn't even realize I had, I just sort of let out. And so when we did our podcast that day, she was like, hey, Tom, it feels like you need to talk about some things. And so we kind of dove into it a bit, and it wasn't for sympathy or anything, but it was just explaining the frustration of trying to sort of please this invisible thing. I'm trying to make the best videos I can. I'm happy with them. And then finding this invisible line of I know if I just did crazy, insane clickbait titles with red arrows and circles and super crazy expression and whatever, it's those videos might do well, but that's also it's just not what I make. And
yeah,
but there's also the part where it's like, well, what if you improve your thumbnail? What if you did better titles? What if you, there are certain things you can do that I'm totally okay doing and experimenting with. So it's like there's parts of the game that you're okay playing and parts of the game you don't want to play. And where that line is really hard. It's, I think it's different for everybody, but it's very hard to figure out. Because it's like, if I make a thumbnail and I like it and I show you and you're like, yeah, that's good, but what if you did this? I have no problem being open to that and going like, yeah, actually, that would be better. And then
boop, now it's better. We got to start doing that. You know,
yeah,
you sending over thumbnails and I thumbnails. Send over mine.
Yeah, it really, really helps just to get that other input. Because I've been trying stuff. I've done the thing where I even take a screenshot of like search results or a homepage and then Photoshop my like example thumbnail in to see how it would pop out. But it's really hard when it's just you doing that stuff. And it's easy to build up frustrations that you don't even realize you have and then start to feel like everything I do is going to be bad or, you know, like the platform's out to get me or something. And that's not good.
I just want to clarify that I don't think that YouTube is punishing me in any way. I honestly don't. I just think that the audience that I've built up are not interested in the videos that I make. I think it's as simple as that. I think that I have to be able to reach that audience that I've built up with, as you said, better thumbnails, better titles, because this is a very good point. No one knows what your video is about unless they actually click it.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
So the title and the thumbnail is everything to getting people to actually click on the video. It doesn't matter if they watch 15 seconds of the video, because 15 seconds and having 10,000 people watching that is going to generate more watch time than like 100 people watching 1 minute.
True. True. Yeah. And so, hopefully you're making a video that once people click on it, they're interested in it and they will keep watching it. But yeah, getting them to do that is tough. And like you said, I like looking at it as a puzzle that you have to solve, not like YouTube sucks and is evil, but it's like, okay,
no.
Something has changed. What has changed? And how can I, without sacrificing what I actually like doing, how can I, figure that out to help things do better? And it's just this constantly moving target.
I think, as we said, you know, especially for my case, since I have set such a high standard with specific videos that I made, I think that the audience expects that all the videos or most of the videos should be at the same level, but they can't be. So fun fact is actually the video that I posted onto my vlog channel yesterday when we're recording this, that performed incredibly well. And I think the total amount of time I spent on shooting and editing that video was around 15 minutes.
I mean that's it. But it did, you know, like it had a good title. Like I'll be totally honest, because both popped up at the same time, literally next to each other on my homepage, which was, I think the title of your vlog one was "It's Not Worth It Anymore." And then there's my all-time favorite Sony camera lenses videos. And I remember I was confused and I was like, wait, there's two. And then I saw, oh, they're on the different channels. And I clicked on the vlog one first. Because I wanted to know what wasn't worth it.
I'm very interested to see if the vlogs can keep generating, because as of right now, the vlogs are getting a pretty decent amount of views. I mean, like, there's 5,500 subscribers on the channel, which is a lot, way more than I thought it would be. And then you have like around 3,000, 4,000 views on each video.
Yeah. I mean,
and that for me is mind blowing.
It's very good, especially for a channel at that size. I mean, it at least shows you the people who are there are there. They're really there for it. Like,
and I love it. I love that, because they're there. They really care about the videos that I make. They really enjoy the videos about me, not the specific things that I do. They enjoy hanging out with me. And I think that that is so awesome, because that is the feeling that I had when Peter McKinnon did the vlogs in the beginning, when Casey did the vlogs in the beginning.
Yeah,
I want that feeling to be shared with the viewer. So like my thought moving forward with the vlog channel has been to make one video or two videos on my main channel, but with the catch that one video is going to be edited by someone else on my main channel.
Oh, wow.
Per week. And then I am going to edit one video for my main channel myself. So I'm thinking like two videos on my main channel every week. And if this works, then I'm not gonna edit any video on my main channel anymore. I hope that this is gonna work, but I don't know.
That would be such a different shift. And then
it would be. And honestly, I think it would be a good shift, because then you have the main channel, as we talked about, like the main channel is the money driver. It's what makes me going to be able to have a sustainable income. Then I can post the videos there that are related to videography and photography and camera reviews and all that stuff. And then the vlog channel becomes the creative outlet where I make the videos that I just record my day-to-day life whenever I want to.
Yeah. I mean, that, and hopefully that then energizes everything. Because what you said in your video that, as we're recording this, you posted yesterday, it's not even just about, what I don't want people to think is that it's just about getting numbers. Like, oh, it's just about views and numbers and views and numbers. But it is how those things can affect other stuff. And so if you spent years building up this huge channel, which has a large audience and hundreds of videos on it, and is where the money comes from to put food on the table, take care of the family, go towards buying a house. Yeah. It's easy to say like, well, I don't need to care how things perform. I'll just put whatever I want on that channel. But you really do kind of need to take care of it so that you don't hurt the thing that you spent years building up. Exactly. And I guess that's just a reality of it, is you want to protect the thing that you've built, which, you know, it's also a way of being respectful of the work you put into it. Like, you're respecting yourself and your time and your effort in building this thing by not just like, who cares? I'm going to derail it with this. So I think that's a tough decision to make. And things can obviously change all the time because YouTube changes all the time. But I think it's very important to have that outlet.
I think so too. And there's a reason why people start different companies. You know?
True. Yeah, true. I mean, I guess you're right. I've always been like confused about how to approach the multi-channel thing, but I feel like you're, through trial and error, really figuring out the purpose of this channel and the purpose of this channel. And there's a lot of clarity there. Yeah, that's cool to see.
It starts to feel like the experiment that I started during the spring is starting to like come to a conclusion on how things are going to be in the future. And as you said, you know, for me, it's not about the money or the views, because I don't care about getting a specific amount of views unless it wouldn't directly affect the income that I have. And of course, right, I can make all the sponsored videos that I get offers for, but then again, I don't want to make sponsored videos that don't feel genuine to my audience. I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. But I don't want to, because I think it's both wrong to you as the viewer, but also for me to just push this out there that I don't want to stand behind just to get the paycheck. I think it's, no, I don't really like
it. I think that would ultimately hurt the channel worse too, because I think you could get, you could get a good paycheck, and maybe with the size that your channel's at, you could, people just because of the numbers of subscribers and stuff would want to keep doing sponsored stuff. But I think that would eventually turn off the audience really quick. And so it's like, you're cashing out on these quick paydays, but then the channel is just, cause I've seen this happen with other channels where that's what happens. Like, they go full time or something happens and it's just so many crazy sponsored things that aren't even super related. And then the channel just like really dies. And I, oftentimes doesn't recover, and definitely don't want that to happen.
No, we're in this for the long run, but I think that, as we said, you know, starting two companies or two channels in this case is the way to go. And since I have the vlog channel, I also think that, like, I gotta see it as making videos there that I just share without the pressure of having the most cinematic vlogs, because I think that if I remove the whole talking about cameras and different framings and all that, you know, tutorial thing, then I think that those vlogs might reach an audience that haven't seen my main channel. I think that's fun.
Very different, because it's so personal and accessible. And I mean, that is the thing that way back whenever this was, a couple of years ago now, first drew me to your channel was that very personal, like, it really felt like I was watching an old school Casey vlog, but in its own different way. And that's what I was like, who is this guy? What's he doing? Like, I think you were hanging up your like world map on the old office wall or something in a video. And I was like, oh, man. What is this video? Yeah, I think that was where I joined in.
I think that's so awesome. It's such a long time ago.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, I think we've talked enough for today, because now we're starting to get sentimental about things.
That's enough then. Okay. We will, no sentiment here.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate that you tuned in today, and I hope that you got something out of this, because we talked about the insurance, YouTube and views and money and all that good stuff. Anyways, really hope you enjoyed it, and that you are now at your destination. If you were in your car or on the train or on the airplane or whatever kind of transportation method that you use this day and age. If you want to follow Tom, then you can go and follow him on Instagram at SodornTom, or his YouTube channel, which is filled with dad jokes, at Tom Buck.
And if you want to follow Peter, he's at Peter Lindgren 1 on everything, YouTube, Instagram. Instagram's a fun follow. And of course, if you want to see the beauty of this podcast in living color, you can join either of our channel memberships or both. we post the video version here. You would get the same video on either one, so that might not be. But you know what? Go for it. It's your money. Do whatever you want to do. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time.